I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
My name is Sarah Kim, and I'm from Austin, Texas. I'm a Cheeselandian because while life is great, cheese makes it better. Go to Cheeselandia.com to learn more, and if it's for you, sign up.
Hello, and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. A few weeks back, we were asked to participate in the first ever World's Biggest Family Meal, and we were so excited to sit down with Laura Gilmore, Massimo Bottura, and talk about their favorite songs and what they love to listen to and what inspires them musically. It's great to see them again, to hear what they've been up to, and it was an absolute blast. So thank you to the whole team who put it together. We're looking forward to the next one. And please, 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 if you want to have more information about it, search out World's Biggest Family Meal to stay connected. Then we're going into the archives for a great performance from Drama. The duo has some new music coming out, and you know, we just saw an announcement that LA is getting back into live music, and we couldn't be happier. The sun is shining. We got vaccines going into arms. So stay safe, wear your mask, socially distance, sit back, relax, and enjoy Snacky Tunes on HRN.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes. I said your love, it wasn't worth it, and I would leave you. You always said I wasn't good enough, and I believed you. Sorry's too painful, now it's too late for us. Sorry's too, but I still believe.
Magic.
and he'll be better than you. And when he says he loves me, I know that it's true. He said, I probably should have told you a long time ago.
You've arrived just in time for dun 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 Snacky Tunes with Greg and Darren. These twins, they were my brothers from another mother at Heritage Radio Network, where word of mouth first started. You know, not everyone knows this, but that is, we started off in the humble back of Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn, in a shipping container at Heritage Radio Network. That's how I got my start. So I met these two dudes, and it's so amazing to get Greg and Darren together for a conversation with Massimo and Laura and Charlie about your top five songs. We're gonna send this playlist afterwards, but we're gonna talk about the songs and the inspiration, because the thing is, what you may or may not know about Massimo and Laura is Laura introduced Massimo to the wider world of art that contains the food.
Yeah.
and music is a huge part of their lives. So I take it away.
Hey, good to see you two again.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
You guys, long. So we only have a little bit of time, and we have a mixture of songs and records from you. So we're going to start with Billie Holiday, which you sent. We're going to mix up a bit because of Autumn in New York is one of the first songs you and I talked about forever ago. But you gave us a different one. What is the Billie Holiday song that you put as your essential Billie Holiday? And why?
There's so many, you know, you can't say, we have to talk about how Billie Holiday was singing. That's the point. It's not about one song or another. It's how she sings. The sounds of the imperfection of her voice that makes a difference, you know, because she was singing her life. So every single recording on stage was something extremely special. Because probably the night before she was like in big trouble and who knows where she was. But, you know, so the way she was expressing one song or another, she was singing her life. That's the difference between her and many other amazing singer that they don't transfer emotion to you. She was transfer more than emotions, you know? And that's what Billie Holiday is to me.
Now, we've all been spending a lot of time at home in the last year, and our thoughts and prayers go out to everyone in Italy who's gone back into lockdown. And one of the songs that you picked was, and if I butcher the Italian, I'm so sorry, but Bella Ciao.
Of course. But Bella Ciao is, I rediscovered Bella Ciao during the pandemic.
Exactly.
Because, you know, La Casa del
Papel. Let's all just say it, Money Heist.
House of Paper, you know. It's Bella Ciao is the essence of growing up in Emilia Romagna. You know, growing up in Emilia Romagna is so, you have to be social because you learn since you're a kid, if you stay together, you gotta be more powerful. Your voice is gonna be heard everywhere. If you by yourself, you can scream whenever you want, but no one is gonna hear But if you're together, you know, you're stronger. Think about the artist, Joseph Beuys. He was looking at you and saying, we are the revolution. We are the revolution because we change everything. You know, Food for Soul, we were thinking, oh, we're going to change the world. But, you know, even if you change your own neighbor, you're gonna feel so good, because if I do that and you're gonna do that and Lady is gonna do that, we're gonna change the world all together. But it's about us. It's not about me or you. All together. Bella Ciao is this.
Can you sing it? Yeah, dude, we're just, and everyone just wants to hear you sing a little bit of it to the best of your ability.
Oh, capitano, portami via. Oh, bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. Oh, capitano, portami via, che è arrivato l'invasor.
Yes.
Yes.
So that is your hero song. Your next choice, which I think speaks to Darren and I in our days of New York, is Lou Reed and the Velvet Underground, New York. Just the whole record. Just the whole record.
It's enough. Okay.
It's, I have a memory in a loft at like 4 a.m. and someone put on the song Heroin and everyone went silent, and it's the most New York moment. What is it about that record that speaks to you? What is it about that,
wait.
Sound?
I'm like, okay, first I picked Sunday Morning.
I mean,
okay. Nico. Okay. But I switched to New York. Because Halloween party, because last time I was in New York, it was Halloween, and we had to set up a party for Barolo in Italy, whatever. And we were walking back home. There was like millions of people on the street. And it was like, every time I listened to this song, I'm back with the memory in that moment. Exactly that moment, you know, we were following the mood, you know, but the whole story about that is the amplifier, is the movement of the song, the way Lou Reed picks the distortion and the movement in the song. It's like a painting, you know, and that's very important, because it reminds me the moment me and Lou Reed, we were talking at like 3 a.m, completely fucked up, like with like drinking and like, and at one point I was talking about bolito misto, not boil. And I was saying, like, with all my passion, no, it's impossible. The people, they cannot, you know, they have to understand that boiling the meat into the water is the worst thing you can do to protect and save the quality of this meat and all this. And I said, stop. He looked at me and he said, stop. He looked on the side. He was talking with the band, and he said, hey guys, this man can understand about my passion for amplifier. And the obsession is the obsession for his amplifier is my obsession with my cuisine. And you know, this kind of relation was like something really, really special in my life.
Deep connection.
Now, you are also one of the great artists who was able to take inspiration from a song and do a direct translation into a plate of food, and keep on 5 from 5 from Straight No Chaser.
Yeah.
Not only did you take the inspiration, but you created a plate of the year. What was it about the song? What's the plate you made? How do you draw those parallels?
No, it's like most of the time when I come back, I'm so full of adrenaline that I cannot go back straight to bed. So what I do, we have a room, a music room. It was a TV room, was that? We transform into a music room that keeps evolving all the time. And during this pandemic, evolved a lot. So, and I, you know, relax. You know, I pick the things that really in that moment, I feel to listen just before going to bed. Could be Tom Waits, could be, you know, whatever. That night, it was Thelonious Monk. And I was so into that song and that vinyl that was like, okay.
Sitting in the dark.
I was thinking about how to transform like a key piano note, the black chord with a chord with a black crust. I don't know what was going on, but I was thinking, okay, if Monk could explain that kind of feeling in the darkness, I can really transform into edible bites. And we did it. And I did it, getting
into— I remember you told me though, that dish, when he first explained it, was he was sitting in a dark room listening to this very dark music and heavy and thinking about everything that Thelonious Monk represented. And he wanted to do a dish that was black on black because he wanted the diner not to see anything, but almost be blinded and just use the palate to distinguish what they were eating. So this black squid katsuobushi broth, the black cod with a black crust on top. And only when you break the cod do you see the white, like the black and white of the keyboard. So there was this moment of kind of trying to almost be in the darkness and let your flavors guide you.
Yeah.
Like,
and then is it in the same short video that we have that is called We Are the Revolution? There's also a transformation of a Warhol video that he was filming for 11 hours.
The Empire State Building
yes. In a snowy day. So it's like, it was a very, very, very creative, amazing moment, you know?
So Chef, and I'm sure we could listen to you and Laura talk about music for hours, but there's many, many more from people when you get to. The last one you sent us was Bob Dylan and his latest record.
Yeah.
What I find so interesting is that you could have picked any Dylan record.
I know. That's why you picked the last one.
And that's important because, and also we all know that by this time around, he could make a Bob Dylan record. He wouldn't have to push. We'd all be happy. We'd all be excited about it. So at that level of artistry, and I think also at the level of you and Laura do, who continue to push where there are no equals or no one telling you to, how do you see his work reflective in yours? To continue pushing yourself? And what did you find in that record that continued to redefine him, that he needed this record now in his canon that otherwise would have been incomplete?
First of all, it's extremely important that after so long, he decided to come out with a record in such a crazy situation, like with the one that we were living.
Yeah.
Everything that was happening in that moment, the whole Mr. Floyd problem, and the way that Trump handled the pandemic, it was United States really need his savior, his poet. And he came out and he spoke for everyone. And I'm goosebump in the meantime, I'm speaking with you. And you know, there's no special effect, nothing except his voice that is changing again for another time. And it's all about the big tradition of blues and country and the poetry with that talks about the fragments of his soul. And it sounds like he talks about, he's reflecting about life and death, a little bit like Damien Hirst, but you know, in a totally different way. In the moment it was like, I have here like the things that he's like, today and tomorrow, and yesterday too, the flowers are dying like all things do, you know? But after that, you have the another sentence that he say, I'm a man of contradiction. I'm a man of many moods. I contain multitudes. So the idea that is like immediately you have the immediate approach about Dylan and think he's talking about himself. He's turning 80. He's blah, blah, blah. But it's not. He's thinking about the future because he's talking about that in a general way. But he's thinking about the future as exactly like us, you know. Yes. I'm like, I'm here in the middle of pandemic taking care of 103 of my 20, 25 years old from all over the world. And, you know, I have to take care of those people, but also I have to make visible the future for them. And so I keep investing for in the future, new project, new idea, new menus. You know, it's amazing. You know, it's amazing how the minds of creative people, you know, works, especially in this kind of situation, like the minds of the creative minds. The world needs the creative minds in these moments.
And they get aligned.
And that's why we create a brand new menu right now, inspired by Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, but it's called With a Little Help from My Friends. And for the first time, a chef is saying to the whole team, okay, guys, come up with me, come on stage. We all gonna do a menu together. And with the friends are my team. And I need my team, and I need the cultural biodiversity of each one of them in such a moment. So it's all about this.
We needed them. They needed us to need them. They needed us to be calling out and saying, we need you up here with us. They needed that invitation to get out of their homes, their isolation, their fears about the future. And so that whole menu was created just to have them there with us.
Amazing. Well, listen, I want to end on one note, one question inspired from Austin Gambino, who's joining us. The future of food, when we all get back out to restaurants and pairing it with music, do you see this as when a dish goes down, hearing a song and tying the taste senses to the audio senses? Are you going to be doing that? Do you see a future there?
Every single place that we have, they have their own music. So I pick all the songs and the music that we are playing in the restaurants. If you ask me, what are you doing every day in the kitchen in Osteria Francescana? I'm answering, compress into edible bites my passion. That is music and art, sitting on centuries of history, because it's deeply Italian, my cuisine, my way of cooking, filtered by a contemporary mind. That means that I'm looking at the past in a critic way, never in a nostalgic one, to bring the best from the past into the future. So a song can really, like in Osteria Francescana, you sit and you, it's all about jazz. It's all about, you know,
improvisation.
You can, if you are a great chef, you can improvise, but you cannot improvise to be a great chef. So that's a very important thing to think. But, you know, when you talk with people about jazz, you have always talk about, so what you like about things? Oh, I love Charlie Parker. I love Dizzy Gillespie. And then you go home and you say, okay, show me some of your collection. And what they pick, Kind of Blue by Miles Davis. I said, what? You know, I'm saying this because if you really are into music, you have to really fight for that. You will fight for a solo, in a solo of Charlie Parker, the most distortion, you know, and you are eating and you have to listen to that kind of stuff because it's exactly the distortion that is in my food. Sometimes there are mistakes. They are there that put you in a kind of
uncomfortable position,
but you taste it and the old world is opening.
So maybe someday we'll connect the food with the music directly in that way. For now,
no.
I'm not sure our guests are quite ready for that, because maybe the music we would choose is a little too...
an artist, a musician, a chef, a writer, a poet. They have to be, you know, they have to do all things. What I love about art is not about what I see. It's about the idea behind that. I care about that idea. So I pick the idea, I steal the idea, and the idea is becoming mine because I'm transforming that idea into something that is mine. So this is very important. Picasso was saying, copy yourself is a very sterile exercise. Stealing from the others is necessary.
Yep.
So that's
beautiful. Wow. Thank you. Well, it was great seeing both of you.
Thank you, guys.
So good to see you again.
I can't wait to go back, you know, have some dinner together in New York.
Yes,
Robert, I want to see all of you in Modena or in the Refettorio in New York.
In Harlem.
Or San Francisco.
We'll see you there, Chef and Larry. Charlie, good to see you too. Bye.
Bye, Charlie. Bye.
Jacket on. And so long I can't see your eyes. Dance like strangers in the dark. It's been so long I wanna see your eyes.
Slowly we become completely numb. We've lost ourselves inside this shell. The end of the night, you and me. Do what we like, end of the night. You and me go home together, or leave separately.
Are you coming
home with me?
Are you coming home?
You told me you think that I'm the one.
I'm the one.
Every day you wanna see my face.
See my face.
Truth is that I'm too young.
I'm too young.
Let's relax and take some space.
Slowly we become completely known.
We've lost ourselves inside this shell. At the end of the night, you and me do what we like, do what we like. End of the night, you and me go home together. Only separately, are you coming home with me? Are you coming home? Running in the rain, you and me all day. Never felt a feeling so good. Holiday in May, hit the beach all day. Never felt a feeling so right. At the end of the night, end of the night, you and me do what we like. Do what we like. End of the night, you and me go home together and do what we like. End of the night, we do what we like. End of the night, we're feeling so good. The end of the night, you're feeling so good. So good at the end of tonight. Oh, at the end of the night. You and me do what we like, do what we like. At the end of the night, you and me go home together and do what we like.
My name is Sarah Kim, and I'm from Austin, Texas. I'm a Cheeselandian because while life is great, cheese makes it better. Wisconsin cheese has proven time and time again to be a delicious expression of craft, hard work, and tradition. As a Cheeselandian, I am able to share a Gouda experience with fellow cheese and food lovers nationwide, as well as connect with cheese producers and cheesemongers, taking my love of cheese to another level. I invite you to join Cheeselandia because during these difficult times, it has been even more important to take it easy and get cheesy. The Cheeselandia community and events have been the glue helping to keep us together and connected, and I would love it if you would join me. And let's face it, if you hear the word cheese and get a little hungry, then you've found a place you can call home. To find out more about Cheeselandia, go to cheeselandia.com.
Welcome back to the show. We have Niall and Via from Drama here with us in studio on Snacky Tunes. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
We are big fans of you two and have been listening for well over last year, so we are excited to have you on and playing for us today. Thanks for joining us.
Sweet, thank you.
So, Via, you actually went to culinary school when you were living out in Hollywood. How did you end up there, and what took you on that path?
I've been cooking since I was maybe like 9 years old. My parents were in a reggae band, and there wasn't a lot of time, most of the time, to cook because they were like rehearsing or on tour, and so I just started cooking. And so when I came of age to like, you know, start deciding what I was going to do with my life, they were like, well, why don't you go to culinary school? And I was like, that's a good idea. And so when I was like 16, instead of going to like high school, I went to culinary school because I was like homeschooled up until then. And they enrolled me in a holistic nutrition program in Berkeley. And I graduated from that when I was 17. And then when I was done with that, my dad was like, well, if you really want to do this, you should just keep going until you're ready to like open a restaurant. And so he put me in another culinary school in Hollywood and, you know, graduated from there and just kind of started working in restaurants.
What was the name of the culinary schools?
Le Cordon Bleu. It was right off of Sunset.
And what year was this?
I think they changed it.
Yeah, what year was this? And what was the culinary scene
2009.
Out? Oh, okay.
2009.
So kind of not the beginning, but close to the beginning of what we are currently experiencing in the modern food scene.
Yeah, I guess so.
What were some of the things that you learned in culinary school that you felt applied to your music making?
Oh, man. I don't know. Maybe having to make recipes. But even then, my music wasn't as structured as my recipes. So, I don't know. I feel like I kind of kept those worlds separate for a long time.
Were you performing when you were in culinary school?
Oh, no. I didn't start doing shows until I was like 24 or so. Maybe I think I did my first show when I was like 24.
So was
I didn't want to be on stage anymore. I was like, I had started off in theater when I was little. And so I was doing a lot of plays and doing like sound and prop design and stage design for a company called Zachary Scott Theater in Austin, Texas. And so I don't remember what happened. I just know that something happened and I did not want to be on stage anymore. And so I never planned on getting back on stage again. And the music just kind of led me back to the stage.
What was the defining moment that got you back to the stage and out of the kitchen? And did you really feel that you were going to go on the path to become a chef, open a restaurant, create your own menus, cook for a living?
Well, I never really knew that I was going to do that. That was just something that I knew came with being a chef. And everyone kind of expected me to open a restaurant. They were just kind of like, oh, well, you're a chef, so when are you going to open your restaurant? And I was like, I don't know. But I don't think I ever really wanted to open a restaurant. Like, really, it was just like a nice idea. Especially after I got out of culinary school and all my teachers scared the crap out of me. Like, you want to commit suicide? Don't open a restaurant right now. And I was like, okay. But
so it's like I'll take the other sure thing. I'll become a musician.
But I still worked in restaurants though, because it was, you know, the only training that I really had. I didn't have musical training, and I didn't go to like college or middle school or like high school or anything. The only thing that I've ever learned is cooking, and then like, you know, being homeschooled, I learned like simple math and history and stuff like that. But I was not paying attention. I was just like doing essays on chipmunks and stuff, like whatever I wanted to learn about. But I didn't like take music serious until I moved to Chicago. Before then, it was just kind of something that I did on my journey to becoming the best chef in the world.
And now you own three restaurants alongside being a producer, right?
Me?
Yeah, he does.
And one's in San Francisco and two in Illinois. How did you come to own these restaurants, and where did the concepts come from? And they're across the board too. It's Mediterranean, South American, and Mexican.
Yeah. So while at some point in my music career, I wanted to like diversify a little bit. So after I finished a couple of projects, I was working on some projects, and then I was like, I'm kind of like, you know, like I don't want to say like I lost passion, but I just needed something else to do at this little like transition period. Because I was like, you know what, music is cool. You know, I've done really well. I want to try to see if I can, you know, tackle something new. And that's what I did. And I had an opportunity. I got a phone call and it was like, hey, we're opening up a restaurant. Would you be interested, you know, in being like 50% owner? So I was like, yeah, sure. Absolutely, man. And then I got into the restaurant business. And for some reason, I feel like the restaurant business and the music business are very much alike. They're probably the most difficult fields to get into and to like maintain and, you know, and to do. So I started off in the first one was a South American restaurant. And then, two years later, there was another opportunity to open up a Mediterranean restaurant. And so I jumped on that right away. And I came up with, you know, with a lot of the recipes and the concepts. And then I got another opportunity. I got a phone call. Somebody wanted me to consult them on a restaurant in San Francisco. And I ended up being a partner with them after everything was said and done. So,
and what
that was like Mexican fusion food. And so like what I did was me and Via were working on drama stuff. And I was like, hey, you're a chef. Why don't you come, you know, help me out? And we started working together on it. And now we have an amazing restaurant in San Francisco.
What was it about your background that prompted that first phone call? Did your family own restaurants, or did they just think that you had a creative eye and they knew that you would be good for the culinary world?
I'm more of a businessman. I know how to build teams. And so like my thing is that I don't like, I'll do anything it takes not to fail. Like I'll do whatever, like I'll work, you know, 24 hours in a day if I have to, you know, and I'll do whatever it takes. But like when I got that phone call, I was like, hey, this is a good opportunity. I can go ahead and, you know, learn and I can, you know, figure this out. I didn't realize how hard it was until I got into it. You know, I've heard it was, you know, it's a very hard business. It's a very difficult business, but I was like, hey, I'm going to go ahead and take a stab at it. And I was still doing music. Like it wasn't like I stopped. I had a studio and I was still booking with artists and doing like recordings and mixing and engineering records. But I would like work at the restaurant during the day and then work on music stuff during the night. But I just did it, you know, like I wanted to explore other fields. And so I invested my money and then that was it.
And since you work on music together and also you work on a restaurant together, is there any difference in the creative process in creating a dish or creating a song?
There are similarities to working in the restaurant. I mean, it teaches you about patience. It teaches you about just dealing with certain things. And that does kind of apply. It does fall over into making music and, you know, and producing a project. So just organization, being a team player, you know, like as the group is getting bigger, more people are being involved. So it's just knowing how to like delegate and be able to work with certain people and keep things moving in a positive way, you know?
Right. If you can get food out on the table that's consistent and good, you can definitely help manage a tour.
Exactly. Absolutely. So I mean, like with me, it's like nothing's impossible, you know? I do whatever it takes to get the job done, you know, and a lot of it has to do with not having any pride. Honestly, it's like saying, you know what, I'm going to put my pride aside. I'm going to do whatever it takes to make sure that this is a successful, a successful project or like outcome or whatever it may be.
Can we hear a song?
Yeah.
What are you going to play for us first?
We're going to play Fuck Dave.
Okay. Well, here we are with Drama live on Snacky Tunes.
Loving you is cold. Loving you is lonely. Loving you is pointless. Loving you is holding. Loving you is lonely, loving you is pointless. one back and nine. So don't tempt me with your oozing eyes. Don't tempt me with your false applause. Your love life is a long lost cause. You're on the smooth way. Loving you is lonely, loving you is pointless. Loving you is holding me back inside. Oh, I'm back and I. Fade, fade, forgive me. I've been sinning. True love was a friend of mine. I chose my. Fade, forgive me, I've been sinning. True love was a friend of mine.
Now, one of the things that I thought was most interesting when you were young and early in your production career, Nicholas Jaar told you that you should really release your own music. I'm very curious, what does a Nicholas Jaar pep talk sound like?
It's very short, I'll tell you that. No, I met him through a mutual friend, Sami, and he wanted to get us together. At the time, I was working on Acid Rap, the Chance Rapper project, and he played at Sound Bar or Spy Bar here in Chicago. And I'm like, I don't really go out much. So I was like, hey, man, you know, like, I'm going to go hear this guy play. I hear so much hype about this guy. So when I saw him played, he came by my office the next day. And we talked for about maybe an hour to two hours. And I was just showing him music, you know. And then he like looked at me. He's like, how come you don't put your own records out? And I looked at him. I was like, honestly, I really don't know. I just never looked at myself of putting like my just music out, you know, just under my name. I've like always worked under someone else, either, you know, a rapper, label, you know, whatever, like whoever hires me, like kind of thing, you know. But like I rarely took on, like I never thought about becoming an artist, really, you know. Like I was an artist, but not like an artist to go out there and tour like what I'm doing now. But he was just like, he's like, how come you put your records out? And I was like, that's not a fucking bad idea. And so it was just him saying that because I really liked his set the night before, and I saw that he went on stage, he played these records. I was like, this is fucking awesome. I'm like, I can do something like this, and then I just did it.
It sounds like both of you were reluctant to become stars or musicians with yourselves at the forefront. Do you think that's what drew yourselves to each other, or that's the commonality you found in how you created this group?
I think that it definitely makes it easier for me to be working with someone who also doesn't necessarily want to be like, you know, in the spotlight or a megastar and doesn't really care about all the flashy things that most people get in the music industry for. Like when I was younger, being a musician wasn't like glorified for me. It wasn't something that like I woke up and thought, I'm going to be a superstar, I'd dance in front of the mirror and prance around and pretend I'm on stage. Like I didn't want anything to do with being on tour and having to deal with musicians wanting more money and like, you know, festival producers not paying you at the end of the day. Like I saw the worst of the worst when it came to my experiences, like watching musicians grow. And so when it came for my turn, people were like, I'm going to go to South By and move to LA. I'm like, why are you doing that? And this didn't make any sense. When I met Niall and he wanted to start a group, I was like, all right, well, you're going to be on stage with me. And he was like, no. I was like, yes, now we can both not really want to do this, but we're going to do it.
What, I mean, what are your pep talks or what are your pre-show rituals to get each other psyched up to be on a place that you don't necessarily want to be?
We call each other potatoes. Come on, Papa, get on stage.
We just motivate each other. Say, like, you're ready, you know, like, let's just do whatever we have to do. I mean, honestly, it's really hard to, like, gauge, you know, like, when you're on stage, like, you don't, you know, like, you want to give it your all, and you want to, you look at the crowd to see if they're feeling it, you know, and it's still, to this day, to me, shocking when we go to these shows. Like, New York was sold out. I was like, I can't believe these many people came out to see us play. It still shocks me, you know?
Yeah. I think once, like, all of the anxiety and the fear and the not really wanting to do it is only before and after. Like, once I think we're actually on stage,
it's a whole different world.
It's just kind of like, oh, we're just up here hanging out, we're vibing, and it's actually a lot of fun. And then afterwards, you're like, oh my gosh, can't believe I just did that.
Yeah.
Ready for bed.
It's like another part of your brain takes over. You're like, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. You black out.
I get so nervous right before I go on stage. Like, I said, stomach shake sometimes.
It's the worst. This might be TMI. I use the bathroom like every 5 seconds, and our tour manager gets so upset because he's literally having to like to walk me through the crowd to get back to the bathroom sometimes. I'm like, I can't help it. I'm so nervous.
You'll know that you've achieved a next level when your green room has a bathroom and you don't have to cut through the crowd.
I know. We have a few, and it's like a breath of fresh air. Yeah.
You're like, my writer is a green room. Yeah, my writer is a green room with a bathroom.
My writer is a green room in the bathroom. And an actual green room, please. One that allows actual greens.
Can we hear another song?
Yeah, absolutely.
What are you going to play for us?
This one, we're going to play Low Tide.
Low Tide. Keeping it chill.
I'm not just anybody. No, my love won't be taken down by a bullet. And I've tried everything, but I'm best at disappearing. And your love used to bring out the best in me. And now I'll be dying when I am reminded. Love to remind me that you're too cool to fall in love. You're too smooth to get caught up in something you can't walk away from. Don't walk away from me. And I know it's safer to believe that you don't mean a thing to me, but I'm a fool, and I'm in love. I'm a fool, and I'm caught up, and I can't walk away. Can't walk away from you. So say, oh, what you're going to say to me, and I'll remember. And I'll meet you in the low tide, low tide. And I'll meet you in the low tide, low tide. And I'll meet you in the low tide, low tide. And I'll meet you in the low tide.
So you just have a new EP come out called Lies After Love. You talk about it being a much more formal process than the previous record. What was the approach and what did you learn from the last time, and what did you do differently on this one?
I think things, we kind of went into it the same exact way we went into Gallows. The thing with us is, like, we continuously, like, make music. So we just work on music, and then eventually it starts to piece itself together.
Yeah. The conversations we have outside of making the music piece the actual project together, because the project's always based on our actual lives. Like, it's always that. So the music comes first, and then, you know, piecing together everything else comes after. But I think the one thing that changed with this would be that, well, I can say that for Niall, because Niall spends 50 hours on all the songs no matter what. But so, like, we both, you know, took a little more time with the songs on this one, and, like, each individual song, and, like, going back and recording things and changing, like, bass lines or drum patterns, and as opposed to the first one with just, like, lots of freestyles and first takes and, you know, just going with the flow.
Do you ever, working together on making a recipe and you have to stop because you find song inspiration, or vice versa?
I don't really thought about that, actually.
No, we keep a lot of it separate.
Yeah.
Like, even though we might talk about the thing, like, we'll be doing music and we talk about, like, how we have restaurants, we'll be doing restaurants and, like, playing our music at the restaurant, but we never are, like, at the restaurant talking about rehearsal, or at rehearsal talking about the restaurant.
I'm sure.
Unless it's, like, an emergency. Yeah. We get a phone call at the music video, and we're like, we have to fly to San Francisco right now.
Yeah.
Which has happened before.
Yeah, which has definitely happened before.
But it's not too much of, like, you know. But my notebook is definitely filled with recipes on one page and song lyrics on the other.
You're like, oh, wait a second. These lyrics are actually just a chicken adobo recipe. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, an English pea soup with cardamom actually would be perfect with this song right now.
I've always thought, you know, everyone knows about the car test for playing your music, but I've actually never heard about the restaurant test. Do you play your songs or tracks in the restaurant just to see people's reactions before you release them?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Really?
All the time. Yeah, absolutely.
All the time. And people walk in, or they're eating, and they come up to it, like, oh, what are you guys playing right now? I'm like, oh, this band, Drama.
Yeah.
They're pretty good. So you should check them out.
Do you ever, has there been any tracks that you were both split on, like, should it make it on the P or not, and you play it, and it didn't make the cut because people's reactions were subpar?
I've played some songs live prior, and just to kind of gauge, you know, but for the most part, I mean, either it goes, like, on this EP or it goes, like, on a future EP, you know? Like, we really make music, like, we just don't, like, you know, like, how Beyonce, like, makes, like, 1,000 songs before she does her album. Like, we make songs, but, like, the majority of the time go on a project always,
yeah,
for the most part, you know? I would say, like, maybe 75 or 80% of the songs that we make don't go wasted at all.
Why do you think that is, or what do you think it is about the process that just gets those songs out there, as opposed to, you know, you hear people make, like you said, you know, hunt a record and scrap the record and start over and no one will ever hear it?
Yeah. I think when we go in, it's like we're working, like, we're going to create music that we don't have a lot of time to waste between all the restaurants and, you know, the recipes and, like, maintaining. I mean, we really are traveling a lot for both music and for, like, business stuff, you know? So, like, when we work, it's like we really, really work. There's no, like, playing around, you know? And I think I'm sure, like, a lot of artists, there's a lot more leisure, you know? Like, when we work, we're in the studio for 12 hours or 8 hours, whatever, and we're actually working on records, you know?
And it's just us. We don't have, like, an entourage of people with bottles and, like, people smoking and coming in and out of the studio.
There's no
like,
entourage.
When we turn on the computer to work, like, we close the doors and we just, you know, kind of shut the world out. And we really focus on making, like, a good record. I'm not just, like, getting in there talking about, you know, what color shoes I have on and how much money is in my wallet right now. I'm, like, thinking about...
It's a job.
Impactful, you know.
Essentially, I mean, want to think about it. I mean, I know the word job, it has, like, a negative kind of, like, thing to it. But it's a job, you know, and you have to treat it as such if you're serious about it, you know, which is why I'm able to run 3 restaurants and a digital agency and still tour and make music, you know? It's just, you have to dedicate yourself. And that's something that you have to remind yourself every day. I mean, you can waste time, and we all waste time as humans, you know? But if you focus on the goal and you dedicate your time towards that goal, there's no reason why you can't achieve it, you know? But my biggest thing is when someone says I have no time. This is like the biggest insult, honestly. You can insult yourself with saying, "Well, I don't have any time," and that's the reason why I couldn't accomplish what I want to accomplish. And it's like, come on, man, that's a cop out, you know.
Speaking of packing things in, you have a tour coming up in June. Where are you hitting?
West Coast.
Yeah, the West Coast again. They love us.
And the West Coast for a couple of shows, and then in September we're going to the Middle East to play and to actually work with in a refugee camp in Bethlehem. V and I are going to work with some of the youth and kind of, you know, give them inspiration that there's more than their surrounding living situation at the moment, you know.
How did that come to be?
I did a workshop last year with an organization, and they brought me out to work with the kids, and then they just emailed me actually not too long ago, and they're like, "Hey, we want you to come back." And so I tied in, and we're already going to perform in Palestine anyways, so I tied in this with it as well. So, you know, we try to just maximize on all of our time that we're there.
So. Elizabeth is the king of maximizing time.
Yeah.
I'm talking like...
There's no downtime, you know?
What? I feel we're going to miss our airplane sometimes, like
no,
time. No. Get there just in time.
Yeah, there's always, you know, we have a lot of structure, and we try to waste no time and try to, you know, maximize on what we have to do.
Yeah.
Make the best out of it.
Incredible. Well, we want to make sure we have time for one more song, but where can people find you, listen to the EPs, check out your tour dates?
You can find us
thedramaduo.com.
Yeah, the Drama Duo, or you go to Spotify and type in drama.
Yeah.
Facebook, Instagram.
YouTube.
The whole thing.
The same. Look up the Drama Duo.
Yeah, or Drama Chicago, either one. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, we want to thank Chef Diana for being on the show as well. Thank you to Drama for joining us. We will be back next week with a new episode of Snacky Tunes. What is the name of the last song you're going to play for us?
Safe House.
Amazing. Well, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week.
More We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
This program is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat & 3 is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert. Listening.